us on the mic, talking life and what's it like. Middle age, it's quite the ride, finding joy and chasing pride. Career dreams and daily grind, funny moments that we find. Letting go of yesterday, making paths along the way. Middle age.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Trav. Good to see you.
Good to see you, buddy. Let's get right into it. As a reminder for those who have been here before and an intro for the first time listeners, welcome to the Tim and Trav podcast. It's basically about life in our 40s and transitions and everything in between. And this season, season two, we are focusing on unique passions.
Can I interrupt you?
Please.
You said life in our 40s. Don't you have a birthday coming up?
Oh, you jerk. Yes, I do. I'm going to be 44.
Well, do you want to share that? The date?
March 5th. I am a March 5th baby.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's March 1st.
That's right.
4 days from now, Trav is getting older.
Yeah, no wiser, but older.
Truth. All right, let's boogie.
Thank you for bringing that up. So, couples card game. This is your new favorite game, which I kind of appreciate.
I love it.
You like it so much.
Yeah.
This one's a pretty general one, but I feel like it's like a really good first date one. We're past our first date, unfortunately for you. But what is on your bucket list, Tim Cummings?
Bucket list? Gosh, you know, Trev, there's so much to consider. I'm going to say if I have to move into that quickly right now, I'm going to say jumping out of a plane.
Wow.
I don't know if I could actually pull myself to do it, but... that would be pretty exhilarating, I would imagine.
What's stopping you from doing it?
The plane.
You don't want to get in the plane, or
no? You know, I think at some point I'll do it. I think I'll wait till the kids get a little bit older, and you know, my role in their lives is less important.
So they're more on their feet.
Like, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, have you done that? Is that something that excites you or no?
I've never done it. I've always wanted to. And then in a similar way, as soon as we had kids, I was like, this seems like something I probably shouldn't do.
I remember an old boss of mine who I have a ton of respect for. When Connor was born, the first thing she said to me was, you know, you're suddenly important, which I thought was very wise, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was very interesting. So, there's so many things that are on that bucket list, but I just think that would be a really interesting thing to do. So I hope to do that at some point in the future. Yeah. How about you? What do you got?
Maybe next episode we'll ask what your number two is. I'm curious. Mine is actually a lot less daring, but I really want to go fly fish Patagonia. I'm like you, I have a few things on my bucket list, but that one really stood out the minute we talked about that question. So...
Why Patagonia?
It's renowned. It has like some of the best water, some of the best trout. It's very challenging. You know, it's Patagonia too, so it's gorgeous. You know, it's if you talk to any fly angler, they've pretty much heard of like, oh yeah, that's the the ultimate trip. So
that's pretty sweet. Like do you when you fish? Do you keep your what you catch?
I do not. I catch and
you
release.
Don't. Oh yeah. Really? Do you eat fish?
I eat fish. I just don't. I don't eat what I catch.
Because you don't like that type of fish, or because you don't feel comfortable doing that?
That's a good question. It's more of a conservation thing. You know, fish that I eat are generally farmed, and so it's done in a way that is not quite as impactful. But me plucking, 10-inch trout out of a stream and eating it doesn't do anything for the local. Ecosystem, it kind of hurts it. So
I got you.
Yeah,
cool, man. Thank you. That's cool.
Maybe,
that was fun.
Maybe those giant trout down in Patagonia. Maybe I'd keep one of those.
It may be worth it. Yeah, if you're going to travel that far, you may want to eat it.
Listener comments. You are coming back off of an international trip here. So
yeah, I got back yesterday. Yeah, I had an amazing experience. I was in Africa for about 8 days. I was gone for about 10. You know, just with the travel on both ends, but. You know, I had a really interesting experience. I was one of our previous guests from season one, Ryan Kelly.
Who, Madagascar Coffee.
Madagascar Coffee Company. I drank some coffee while I was there, or a lot of coffee while I was there, and it was really amazing. That guy loves coffee. I mean, he does, and it was a really cool experience to see kind of the inner workings of his project. He's got, you know, a lot of mountains to climb, as any young entrepreneur does, but he's really committed and determined to do it the right way. And, you know, I'm really excited for him as he continues down that road. So it was interesting, though, Trav, because I was with him and he showed me a text that he got, or like it was a LinkedIn message that he got from someone who had reached out to him. This guy, I think, was from the States and kind of wanted to, like, you know, learn a little bit more. And I think he was ultimately like soliciting him for it was a sales pitch. Mm-hmm. And Ryan wasn't interested in the product. He didn't need it at this point in time and just said, no, thank you. And the guy wrote him back and said, oh, I've been following your story on the Tim and Trav podcast. So he was listening, and it was kind of cool, right? I mean, it was kind of a neat way for these voices to get out there. And I know that it meant a lot to Ryan to be able to share his story. And, I just thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah, that is cool. I do think that's one of the cool byproducts of this whole little project we've got going is that, you know, we get to talk to really cool people personally, you and me, but then also, you know, maybe help spread a little bit of each individual story and, you know.
Yeah, it's fun.
That kind of thing. That is definitely one of the coolest byproducts of this whole thing that I was not expecting. I guess I probably should have expected that.
I wasn't expecting it either, but I think it's great. I'm with you on that. So how about you? You got any comments?
Hi to Ryan. Yes, we have a first, you know, longtime listener, Mama Gates. She said she's very proud, and the podcasts do make me smile, so they bring me joy. Loved the guests on episode 204 and 205. You two know some amazing people. And I would have to agree with her.
Man, you know what? Let's go back to your comment earlier about byproducts, because that is also something that I did not anticipate when I, you know, started this little venture with you. Her saying it brings me joy, that pretty much like does it for me, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, I would have to agree. She deserves it, right? Because she put a heck of a lot of work into you.
She tried.
But no, I mean, she's an incredible woman, obviously means a lot to me, of course, you know, growing up in your household, all those years when we were young, but if us, you know, doing our thing here and bringing in these awesome people is spreading joy in any way, then I think we're winning, you know, and I'm really happy about that.
I totally agree. Another positive byproduct that I was not necessarily anticipating. If you all out there in the universe have a comment or a question or any constructive criticism, timandtravpodcast@gmail.com is where you can reach us. We may not read all of them on air, quote unquote, but we will definitely read them. So thank you very much. We appreciate any and all messages. timandtravpodcast@gmail.com.
I can't remember that email address. Thank you, Trav, for repeating it.
It's also like, I feel like I'm like a 90s kid whenever I say that, because I like when you leave a voicemail, you don't really have to say your number anymore. I still say it twice. I don't know why.
You know, I do too, actually. That's an interesting point.
Slowly so they can write it down.
Yeah. Well, because you know that if you're the one that's receiving it, you know, you're often getting yourself tripped up on the other end trying to keep up.
Totally. Totally.
Trev, you know, a lot of people have asked me because I, you know, talk to them about the podcast and whatnot. And I keep hearing from people, they're saying like, how many listeners or followers do you have? And maybe on the next episode, it might be good to kind of give that update. Cause
For sure.
My response is I have absolutely no idea.
I can tell you the short answer is that it is growing.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I found really interesting is in looking at the analytics that these various services provide, you can really see what works and when it works and when it doesn't. And, you know, like, for example, our YouTube channel, not necessarily the biggest thing, not the biggest driver. Wasn't expecting it to be, frankly, given our platform. But, that's super low, and that's okay. Yep. But, you know, our Apple Podcast and our Spotify is growing pretty steadily. So, next time I'll give you some numbers. It's kind of interesting.
You know the message I take from that?
What's that?
We sound better than we look.
I totally agree. I've said since day one that I have a face for radio, so I'm fine for it.
You're not alone, man. And you are so much better looking than I am, so geez.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
No, it's so true.
Tim, awesome wife moment?
Mine is so easy, Trav. Listen, dude, I've been gone for 10 days, right? So I left poor Christy with three rambunctious children for 10 days, a wild and crazy dog, and her full-time commitment to her work, and she hit it out of the park.
Yeah.
Simple.
That's a lot to take on, man. That's a long
time. It's a lot. I mean, that's a lot, right? Like, her days are long. She's got a ton on her plate. And I'm kind of just scratching the surface with everything else that she has going on. I mean, those are the high-level responsibilities. But, you know, the fact that the house wasn't burned down and everybody's healthy.
Yeah.
If you reverse the situation, it could have been a problem.
Well, I have to ask because, you know, Kristen travels a fair amount for work.
Yeah.
And I always wonder, what do you think is easier? Do you think it's easier to be the one that leaves? Or do you think it's easier to be the one that sticks at home and has to do all that stuff?
Oh, that's a great question, man. I mean, I don't know if, I guess just looking at my most recent experience, I had the easier role, right? Yeah. I mean, I have to admit, I missed my family tremendously, but it was really interesting to travel and not carry any responsibility outside of my commitments to work. And then, you know, there was a little bit of like personal, you know, my time with Ryan afterwards. So,
right.
But to not have to focus on the kids or worry about anything, like that was a very therapeutic experience in a lot of ways, sure, right? Like we don't get those opportunities. So, and I don't really travel that much at all like that. And without especially kids. For that, right. that period of time. So, I think she definitely was, you know, dealing with the stress and the chaos, and she did an amazing job with it. I'm just thoroughly impressed. I will say, and if Christy's listening, I'm going to ask her to mute this part of it. I got home after like a 24-hour flight yesterday. Now, look, everything was amazing, right? But do you want to know within the first 13 minutes what I was doing? Of walking in the house,
I'm so curious. What 13 minutes in?
Well, I had to go. I noticed a few spots that needed vacuuming.
Brought to you by Dyson. Here it comes.
Yeah, I was like, I walked, and then I was like, you know what? I think I have a big problem. I've been home. I've been gone for 10 days. I've been home for 13 minutes, and I'm vacuuming. That's not good.
That's you might seek help.
I think I need to. Now, again, Christy, if you're listening, this is not a slam. You did an amazing job. There were just a few areas that I saw, right? Because my eyes are laser focused on dirt and debris that just needed to be attended to. So love you. Thank you. How about you? What's your awesome wife moment?
That's amazing. So recently, Kristen is definitely more on the outreach side of things than I am. It's like she's always kind of looking for different things to do and, you know, opportunities and so forth. And she's really good at that. That's the broad level. But specifically, she ended up hosting, and we did it together, but she set up this thing, which was the International Visitor Leadership Program through the State Department. You might be familiar with this. I had never heard of it before, but basically what it is there are people that are traveling internationally through the State Department and here in the U.S., and they will offer up or find folks like us who will volunteer to host a dinner with these folks that are in. And, you know, basically it's kind of one of those, like, just culturally vibe, you know? Cool. And so one of the cool things was, is there were three people that came to our house for this dinner from three different places. And it was, they were all part of the same group and they were here I think their initiative here, you know, obviously not with us, but professionally they were here to basically talk about AI and the standards for, you know, like regulating AI basically and how that's done internationally, how that's done here, you know? And so they talked, you know, they went to Harvard and they talked to a bunch of different people who are more steeped in that realm. But for our side of it, it was basically just like, what does a family of four in Midwest, you know, Ohio look like? And what is it like to have a dinner party with those folks? And you know, the kids got to be involved, you know, for dinner and stuff. And it was the coolest thing to just have complete strangers.
That is cool.
Come over. And, you know, we talked about everything. Like it was really interesting and it was a really fun night in terms of just you know, meeting perfect strangers who you would probably never have the opportunity to really speak to, frankly.
How do I get in on that? That is so cool.
So that's kind of interesting. It's, I bet you can look it up. It's International Visitor Leadership Program. I think they do it pretty much everywhere. IVLP, and it's through the State Department. And it was just so cool. It was like, it was really neat to talk to these folks. And honestly, Kristen set the whole thing up. You know, we did a whole, unfortunately the weather here wasn't great. It was snowing. And we were actually kind of worried that they wouldn't be able to come because the roads were so bad, but it ended up working out well. I bring up the weather only because normally we'd do like a kind of like a cookout or something, you know, a little bit more stereotypical American, but we did a little taco bar thing and it was fun. So
that is so cool, really cool, man. Shout out to her too for pulling that together. I have to look into that. I think that's so great.
You guys
love it. It makes me think just about, in general, you know, I need to have more people over for dinner. No, I mean, really, like we those are really important opportunities that I think, you know, personally, we don't seize on those that as much. And granted, we're busy, right? Like there's always things going on, but I don't know. I mean, you don't need to prepare, an incredible meal. Or, you know, the house doesn't need to be spot clean. Like, people should enjoy just being with one another. So I think we need to do more of that.
I totally agree.
And I love that opportunity is available. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, good job, Kristen. She really pulled that all together. And, you know, I think they've made some lasting memories for the kids as well, which is great.
Did you tell them about the podcast?
I did not. I don't know if you've heard of me, but...
Yeah. You know.
No, I should have. We should have had a an actual guest spot. We should have done a live recording.
Yeah, that would have been really cool. All right. Speaking of awesome stuff, something awesome you've seen or experienced recently, Red. What is it?
So, I got to be honest. This one kind of caught me off guard. I didn't really think about it. But one thing that has resonated with me, and this is a very, I don't know if you can call this awesome, but it is one of those things that has resonated with me in the last week. I fall prey to a little bit of like seasonal affective kind of stuff, like where it's like, man, I haven't seen the sun. Yep. It is like been under 30 degrees for the last month and a half. I got hit with norovirus and the flu back to back, and I've just been like, down, whatever. Anyway, the other day, I'm finally kind of popping out of it and the sun came out and it was like 45 degrees and I walked to get Jewel from the bus stop and I just looked up and there were like seagulls flying around and the sun was kind of, I mean, look, it's not like it was tropical, but it was like, and it was one of those things where I just, and like, exactly. I breathed in some fresh air. I felt the sun on my face a little bit and I was like, you know what? I need to just take a breath and realize these moments more often because this is like, you know, for those of you who are not in like an Ohio, that may sound absolutely ludicrous, but, you know, January and February, the dog days of winter can get pretty boggy. And so it was very nice. That was probably the thing that comes to mind first. It was just like, ah, this is, we're getting there. Spring is coming, you know, take it while you can get it.
Well, good for you though, man, for like, for recognizing that moment and snapping yourself out of it a little bit. I think that's really great.
Yeah.
That's hard too. Yeah. I just real quickly on your thing. I don't like the darkness like that comes with winter. That's really hard for me.
I agree.
When it's dark at 5 and whatnot, that kind of just shuts me down. But I think that's great. And I appreciate you sharing that. I think it also, you know, for the listeners out there, it speaks to, you know, our ongoing need to, kind of pause a little bit and take it all in. So
I totally agree.
Mine's a little more silly. And I'm going to have to go back several weeks. I remember I was walking to Abbey one morning and I was listening to a Times piece or something on my phone. And there was this thing that just caught my attention, which I thought was so funny. The San Antonio Zoo, I believe that's the, I almost have to like just pull it. Yeah. So the San Antonio Zoo, right around Valentine's Day, they've been doing this for several years. Did you hear this story or no?
No.
So they offer opportunities for people to purchase, just bear with me, okay? Purchase cockroaches And you can name it right around Valentine's Day. You can name a cockroach after like an ex, right? So somebody that you had previously dated, and they feed the cockroaches to lizards. Now, I heard this and I was like, you know, at first I was like, come on, right? And then the more I thought about it, I was like, that's brilliant. Like,
it is pretty what brilliant.
That is a brilliant fundraising technique, like marketing technique. You know, it's sort of way off the beaten path, totally different. So I just did some like researching on that this morning. Mm-hmm. And I think this article's maybe back to like 2023 or no, this is 2024. And they said that they've had like more than 7,700 donations from 50 states, 30 countries. This is all in 2023. Whoa. But since 2020, so this is just the window of time from 2020 to 2024, this fundraiser brought in like $225,000.
Holy cow, that's amazing.
So, you know, I got to give these people credit. I just thought it was hilarious. Like, you know, kind of, I really, we've talked about this in the past, but anytime someone's sort of thinking, you know, is innovative in any space, it's kind of funny, right? Like they're going to feed these lizards cockroaches anyways. Why not charge people to name them after somebody? So
yeah.
So I put in $25 and I named one Trav.
Is that, I wonder if there's like a cockroach voodoo type thing where it's like, did I wake up with back pain because
maybe that's why you got so sick. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Thanks for the norovirus. I appreciate
it. It was
that.
Very Good funny, jerk. Man. So I just thought that was hilarious. I thought it was a great story.
That's awesome. Yeah. I really like that. And I'm with you too. I love when not only is it like an innovative thought, but you know, like there's a ton of different fundraisers out there. You know, there's a million different ways to do that. Unfortunately, most of them fall into the typical camp. So when something falls outside of it, it's like, oh wow, that's really fun.
It was
and
funny.
It doesn't, like you said, they're gonna eat the cockroaches anyway. So it's
exactly.
Yeah. That's really cool. I love it. So speaking of all things innovation, do you wanna give a little intro to our guest?
Yeah, this is going to be fun. Benji lives around the corner from me. I've been driving past his house and popping in, you know, for the past 2 or 3 years, watching this dude construct a car in his garage, right? Unreal. So he started with an engine. Most of the time that I talk to him, I have no idea what he's talking about. outside of the fact that, like, you know, he's up against a tremendous challenge. But what inspires me so much about him is that he's just totally taking it on. So I think this will be a really fun conversation. Let's bring him in.
Cool.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is it. This is it. Very excited to have Benji here with us today. Benji, welcome to the Tim and Trav podcast. I know that you have not listened yet. Is that correct?
Not yet.
You know,
I'm making him comfortable right at the gate.
I'm being honest.
I'm glad we got that out of the way. That was awesome.
I'm gonna check it out though.
Well, you better listen to this episode because you're the star, man. And Benji, we're very lucky today because Trav has a new voice. So welcome Trav's new voice.
Thank you. Took a lot of flu and fever to get to this point. Thank you.
Trav is coming out of the flu, so everybody out there, just, you know, bear with him. But he's going to be okay. I'm confident. So Benji, it's awesome to have you, and really excited to speak a little bit
about what you've
been up to. Can you, before we jump in, can you tell us a little bit about your normal day-to-day activity?
My normal day-to-day, I get up at 6:30 in the morning. That's when I start work. Get home by 3 o'clock. Wait for the kids to get home, and 3 times a week I'll go train martial arts that I teach also. And then, you know, besides that, take the kids to their basketball practices, and my daughter's playing the violin, he plays the piano, so it's hectic. There's a lot going on besides, you know, me and my wife's lives.
Yeah,
so it's busy. It's hard to find the time, but, you know, you got to make time.
Well, we're going to get into that in one sec, but so Benji's a busy dude, two young kids who are very active, and a full-time job, and, you know, he's in the grind, I guess, like many of us, right? So I think what's really unique, and Trav, just full disclosure here, Benji lives around the corner from me, and I don't know, Benji, maybe it was a year, 2 years ago when I was, you know, passing your house, I started to notice some interesting things going on in your garage.
Yeah.
When did...
It was 2023.
2023. So let's jump into Benji's got all this stuff going on, yet he still decided that it would make sense, because he's a handy guy. I've seen his work, woodwork, However, Benji is currently in the process of building his own car.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, at first, well, since I was young, I've always been around the car scene. You know, my uncles did body work, paint job, mechanics. So I've been all around it. And I used to always go to the racetrack in Englishtown. And I would just go in there and ask questions to anybody. You know, famous guys, some cool guys that, you know, that are known in the import scene. And, you know, I go with my camera and I ask them, hey, I'm trying to build a car myself. Can you show me what you got under there or what are the steps? You know, just to get myself, you know, in there to see what I'm expecting. So it's a hobby. It's always been a hobby. I love building things. And then from there, everything started. I had my first car when I was 17. It was a 1981 Toyota Corolla. Old little box square car. Yeah, it was like, and I'm not a mechanic or anything. Just by seeing my uncles and cousins do it, and you know, it's like a puzzle. You take it out, you put it back the way it was. You just gotta ask them, okay, what are the torque the specs and everything to make sure everything was good. So that's how everything began. Started swapping engines, taking changing an automatic to a 5-speed. Just going to the junkyard, find the same type of car model. All right, everything fits, bam, there you go. And then from there, everything else went on. I had a few cars that I rebuilt the motor. I blew the motor, number one, because I didn't tune it. I didn't do it the right way, you know. You hear everybody tell you, hey, just go buy that motor, get a turbo kit on eBay, and there you go, you know. And I'm like, oh, it worked. Yeah, it worked. It worked for a little bit. It worked for a little bit, but after, you know, a few boosts, going over boost, the engine couldn't handle it, blew the engine. Oh, man. It's so sad. You spend so much money, and then you blow the engine, and now you got to go back to the shop, take everything apart. You know, I know you guys know the deal.
No.
And then, you know,
start all over. No. All right, just stop for a minute, right? He's talking like everybody out there does this, right? Like it's just sort of like you go to the grocery store and you pick something off the shelf and all of a sudden it's a button on your car. I have no clue what you're talking about, and that's why I'm all the more fascinated.
Yeah, for sure. So Benji, what are you building right now? What kind of car is in your garage that you're building right now?
Right now, well, let me go back a little bit, because I bought a 1990 Mustang GT used, but the engine is still good. You know, that project was supposed to be for a Shelby from Factory 5 company that I was gonna buy that kit, and then you put everything together. But you know, saving a little money here and there. By the time I would have probably got the car, I was gonna be 60. And then by the time I'm 60 years old, you know, who wants to hear the loud noise, right? You want a nice little quiet car and, you know, whatever. But that's how it started. I had to end the whole drivetrain, the computer. I bought the 8.8 rear that goes to it. Pretty much the whole car that was crashed, I bought everything that was good to it. All right. Sat down, sits in the garage. Tim would see every day. Hey, what are you doing over there? So I'm building a shelf, you know, but that didn't happen. So in 2023, one of my friends, he's still in the racing scene. I asked him, I was like, hey, do you know who's selling a 1981 Toyota Starlet? Cause I used to have one, 13 years back that I also built for racing, but that was strictly for the track. Like I cut everything up, did a roll cage in it, mini tubs, the whole nine, but it was only for track. I wanted a street car, you know, like a hot rod. Mm-hmm. So then I asked him, I was like, hey, you know anybody that got a Toyota Starlet? And it's funny because I sold him the car that I built. Mm. And then he goes, oh, I got one laying around. I was like, what? And so those cars to us Puerto Rican people, it's like having a Ferrari for us, because those cars are hard to find. And you only find them in like Puerto Rico or in the islands. Mm. So he had one. I went to go see it before. I was like, I want it. Do not sell it to anybody. I want it. So I went to go check it out to make sure everything was, it wasn't too rusty or anything like that. So I bought it. I bought it in 2023, $2,500. If you look at the car, you'll look at me like you're crazy.
It didn't work?
It's easy because everybody's done it before. You know, people have thrown V8s in there. They've thrown rotary engines. I don't know if you heard of rotary engines. They come from Mazdas.
Yeah.
They're a little tight, tiny motor that has two rotors. Look like a, the pistons look like a triangle.
What was that? The
pretty
RX,
much.
What was it? The RX or something?
RX-7.
Yeah.
Those kind of engines. So my first Toyota Starlet I had put that engine in it, but I never got to finish it, and then I sold it. So that's what I'm working with right now. So basically, I cut the whole floor off because it was rusted. The whole floor from, let's say I have a 3/4 chassis. So the front of the engine is stock. The front of the engine bay, let me say, is stock. And then from the pedals back, gutted the whole floor.
Wow.
Reinforced the whole chassis with 2x3 tubing because that's how they do them. You know, that's how they build the hot rods. And I was able to fit the engine in there. If you see it, you'll be cracking up. You know, it's like this big V8 fuel injection in this tiny little car that looks like a Golf, Volkswagen.
Oh, I'm actually gonna look one up. A Toyota Starlet, huh? I gotta picture this.
All right.
Yeah, if you look it up, look up Toyota Starlet drag car. So then, like that, you'll see pretty much what I'm building with the big tires in the back, skinnies in the front.
Oh my gosh, right. This is amazing. Yeah. We're going to have to put a photo up for people, but this is unreal. So you slammed a V8 in this tiny little car.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, when you say when you say that you replaced like 3/4 of the bottom of the chassis and all that, mm-hmm. I take it then you are a very talented welder.
I went to school for welding, but it's just I only went to two classes because – like I said, I've done it before in the shop with my uncles and them, but I'm not certified. But I know enough to do it myself.
Yeah.
You know, like I never jump into anything if I'm not 100%. Mm-hmm. So what I did was when I did the chassis, I did everything by wood. My template was pieces of 2x4s.
Oh, okay.
I set them up nicely, like if it was the metal frame, mm-hmm. and then I bought it from a metal place in Edison, a metal supplier, and I did the templates. I took it to Wayne in Milltown. He has a machine shop, and he welded everything up for me the way I wanted. Hmm. And then I brought it back. I brought it back here. I know this other guy that's a certified welder because I didn't want to do it. You know, that part I didn't want to do. I'll do like smaller stuff. This guy I got from Patterson, that he's a certified welder, and he does a lot of jobs. I looked at his work. He came over here, and pretty much he just welded it together. I was the engineer because I did everything. So all he had to do was come and stitch it up. Boop, 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 stitch it up, you know, and that's it. The chassis is reinforced, you know, because with that strong engine, I don't want this car to twist on me. So,
what does that mean for the uninitiated like us? What is it when you say you don't want a car to twist on you? What's that mean?
Well, the car with that engine, it has 225 horsepower stock, and the torque is at 300.
Oh, okay.
So if that chassis is not reinforced, as soon as I launch the car, it will twist on me.
It'll literally twist. Like, yes. Like licorice, kind of.
It will twist, and then as soon as I launch, the body will just twitch, and then the car will never be straight no more. You'll see it. You'll see it.
Holy cow!
Yeah, it just imagine some of those V8s at the track, and they're pushing like 1,000+ horsepower. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you see when they launch and they lift, you see the body kind of twist a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to do your homework before you start building chassis and everything like that. Because I don't want to be all, I want to make sure that it's safe to drive on the street, mm-hmm. you know.
And what phase of the build are you in right now on this one?
I already have the transmission mount on it. The engine mounts are on the whole floor. I just pretty much got to cover the floor mm-hmm. with the sheet metal mm-hmm. and then the tubs. They call it tubs. wheel tubs to cover the wheels and the inside. I probably got like $1,500 more to finish.
And how long? How many like man hours are you talking about here?
Oh, I don't. It's been a 2 year build so far.
Wow. 2 years.
So far, 2 years.
Wow.
So this is 2 years, but
Benji,
little by little.
True. Mm-hmm. You could have bought a car in 2 hours.
But it's not the same. It's because, like I said, I like building things. You know, like I've done so many things over here at my house, and this was like my second chance to have the same car that I had years ago that I never got to finish. So now I get to finish it the way I wanted it. You know, because I wanted for the street, a street rod, so I could take it to car shows. It's not just going to be a track car, so it's legal. It's going to be legal. It's got the turn signals. To make it a street legal car, it has to have turn signals, running lights, and everything.
All right, Benji, I'm sorry. So I think Trav is a little bit more enlightened in this field than myself.
Not much.
Let me just break this down real quickly, if I can, in real, real layman's terms here. You inherited or bought a real big engine for a car that you're not building. You took that engine and put it in a really tiny body, right? So you had to do all these different manipulations and changes to make sure that it would work. This most people would probably not put an engine this size in a car this small. Is that fair?
Yeah. People that is into the hobby, like I am, they would do it because some people will take a V8. Like I said, I'm not the first one to do this type of work. So that's why it's a little easy for me to do the research and kind of see how they did it, you know? Because they'll take those little tiny cars, slam a V8 in there, and then they go to the circle track and just do drifts all day, drifting. They do drift competition, burnout competitions, you know? And they have fun with it. And they'll keep going until they break something. And they're satisfied. I don't want to break nothing.
Will you have like heating and air conditioning in the car as well?
Oh, no. There's no heating. There's no air conditioning. There's no radio.
Well, yeah, wow.
It's just going to have a fuel cell in the back. It ain't even going to have back seats. The back seats are tubbed out. So I'm only going to have two racing seats in the front.
So, Tim, just to translate, there's no heat, there's no air, and there's no radio. Those are the three things you look for in a car for yourself. So I don't think...
Yeah, my next question was about the built-in GPS, but I'm assuming that you don't have heat and air.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
That it will have. So to make sure that, you know, if my speedometer doesn't work, I'm going to have a GPS. So I'm doing the speed limit. Yeah. They have so many stuff out there, like FuelTech. There's a company called FuelTech. There's so many things that they sell to work all that, you know, like a standalone computer. It does everything by itself. You just got to plug and play.
That's crazy.
Things are so easier today to build a race car if you want. Back in the days, it was a little harder because you had to pay people to do it. Mm. Now these days, everybody do it yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Like they say, do it yourselfer.
If you hit a point where you have a question or you're not quite sure what to do, do you lean on things like YouTube, or is it like a go find one of those people that you were talking about earlier where it's like I try and find somebody who's more steeped in it, or like what's your step for that?
YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. I've researched YouTube and I look at the videos that a lot of people like have good views on it. Mm-hmm. Or it's legit.
Yeah.
And then also before I jump the gun, I go to my uncle's. Hey, I want to start this engine. What do I have to do? Because I never messed with the V8 before. Mm-hmm. I mess with four cylinders, I mess with rotaries, but no V8s. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they tell me the steps and I do it. Or I research it on Google, torque specs and everything like that.
That's so intimidating to me. That it, like, the idea, the minute you say like torque spec, I'm like, nope, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm gonna blow something up. I'm gonna lose a digit. We're not doing it. Nope.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
I'm not afraid. Yeah, I'm not afraid to try because, like I said, I did it before. I didn't go to school for for building engines. I just did it.
Yeah.
It's like I said, when you take it apart, put it back on the way it was, and just the only thing you have is the torque spec. Wow. You know, like when you're putting a brand new head gasket in, or when you put in the piston rings into the block, mm-hmm. you have to make sure everything is correct, the torque specs, all that. If not, you're...
Yeah.
I remember when I first built that engine, and everybody thought that they were laughing at my friend, because as soon as I gave it that first crank, it started on command. I was even souped, like they call it. I was souped up. And then they were laughing at my friend because he was actually a mechanic. And they're like, oh, Benji's a non-mechanic, and he rebuilt that engine by himself and turned it on. And how many times it took you to rebuild your engine? So that made me feel good. And that's one of the things that, you know, by doing this, it feels good, because I don't know if you guys ever went to car shows, mm-hmm. you know, like old school car shows, hot rods. When you go there and you talk to these guys, they all, you know, tell you, oh yeah, I built this engine myself. Mm. Yep. I had to go to California to sign this fender, you know, or this and that. So it's like a good story. Like they call it cars and coffee. Mm-hmm. Mm. You know, there's like a group that they hang around and they do that. Mm-hmm. They all go there. Everybody's so nice. You don't even have to know nobody. You walk in there, they look at me, whatever. That's what I like. Mm-hmm. You know, you go there. Hey, how you doing? Nice car. What year is this? Oh, this. Soon as they see that you know how to, you know what you're talking about with the cars, mm-hmm. they talk to you like if you knew them for years. That's what it feels good when you go to those type of places. And then you learn more stuff.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. That's a cool built-in community. You know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. that's really cool.
Benji, all in, you don't have to share this if you don't want to, but how much money do you think you're going to spend on building this thing?
So far right now, I'm probably going to be at $14,000 by the time I'm done.
And could you?
It's just,
and
if still you sold not bad.
It, yeah. No, that's not bad. If you sold it,
if I sold it right now the way it is, I could get $10,000 for that. If I take out the engine, I still get $10,000 for that.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Just, so you just like the way it is, the way I have.
I was just gonna say, when you're done, you think you could sell it for over 20?
Probably, yeah.
That's wow. great.
Because right now online, I looked up on Facebook Market, and a lot of people with the engine for $32,000.
Wow.
$32,000 with a small little rotary engine, 13B turbo. And the more horsepower they have, the more they can sell it.
So I'm always curious about this with people that are really steeped in cars and rebuild things. Once this car is done, right, like to the point where you are really enjoying it, and you know, it's like, there's probably little tinkery things you'll do here and there to it over time, but is there like a shelf life for you before you get bored and want to do another one?
No. Some people get bored when they're done. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they try to add more. They'll be like, oh, I want to paint it a different color. I'm tired of this color. Okay. Oh, I want to rebuild the engine. Now I want to make it 400 horsepower.
Oh, okay.
They do get bored. Trust me. They do. Oh, I'm going to buy different rims. I'm tired of those rims. I'm going to sell those. And it's crazy. So it's you can't say you're never done.
Right, right.
But with my budget, I don't want no more than that. I'm happy once I have it, when I have it painted, mm-hmm. then that'll be complete, and I'll leave it the way it is. You know? Because this car is an investment. I wouldn't jump on it if it wasn't going to help me in the long run. Let's say in the long run, I need the money, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say if I need the money, I'm older. I don't really want to hear that noise anymore. So I'll sell it. Mm-hmm. I'll ship it to Puerto Rico. Somebody's going to buy it.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting to me. One of the things we've found a lot with people in their passion projects, like on the side, is that they have a very definitive, like they know that they could keep going, but they don't necessarily do it because they want to continue on with what another part of their passion, or they have kind of a goal with it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like one person we've spoken to was a book writer that just aired today. And it's like, you know, he could probably continue to hone those stories, but he knows when to leave it. You know what I mean? So I was just curious how that kind of translates. It makes a lot of sense in the car building mm-hmm. world. So when it's done, is there a term for it? Like, is it like, if I were not a moron and you walked up to me and you said, "Hey, this is what I have," what would you say? It's like a, obviously it's a Toyota Starlet, but is it like, you know, like how would you describe it?
It's just my little street rod.
That's underselling it, Benji.
the people, but I won't even have to say nothing, to be honest with you, because once they see me rolling around that corner and they hear that engine, people's going to be like, what the hell he has in that? That sounds like a V8. They're going to know.
Yeah.
They're going to know. So the car's going to speak for itself. If I take it to, once I roll it to a car show or whatever, right here in Milltown that they have every summer, I can't wait. I'm just going to roll in there, park the car, put my glasses on, kick with my coffee in my chair, and people just going to walk to me and be like, what you got in there, kid? What Frankenstein car is that?
That's awesome.
That is so funny, Benji. Wow. You know, something that's been weighing on me this whole time, I've been dying to ask, is how many rolls of duct tape did you use in building that car?
And a lot.
That's my kind of car.
A lot of screws, though. A lot of screws holding up the. Yeah, though. But the screws to hold up the wood while I was imagining my chassis before it actually, you know, happened.
Is that a pretty typical thing that people do? Is they use a wood frame like that to do it, or is that just like of your own invention?
Some people use different type of things, cardboard.
Oh, really?
You know, okay. Yeah.
So having an outline is normal.
Yeah, but I like to visualize to see exactly, you know, because then when I even cut it, you know, because, you know, when you buy a 2x4, the 2x4s is actually 1.5 by 3.5.
Right.
It's not a 2x4. So I even sliced it to make it 3-inch. So when I took it to the shop, this is what I want. I want a 2x3, and this is the angle cuts that I want you to do. I had them cut everything for me, 45-degree, a 30-degree. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of math.
Yeah, I was just under there. Say,
And then leveling it, like when the guy came to do the chassis, it took me. I was scared, to be honest with you, because I was like, if this guy is not a good welder, I'm screwed. You know, because that has to be straight.
Yeah.
And I know the guy was kind of frustrated with me, but he was good with me. Like I saw it in his face. He was getting frustrated because when we were lining up the chassis and everything, you know, it's a process. I had to put everything up on, when, before we did the chassis, I had to make sure the car was level, all sides, front, back, middle. Make sure the car was level. So I had to put it up on wood pieces. Like I said, I looked it up. I got some DVDs, some old DVDs I had of how to build the chassis, how to build the back half, you know, and they show you these things from like a real shop, like Chassis Engineering. They have a video that I bought. And so I went from that and make sure everything was nice and level before we did it. And now, all right, make sure I want this, you know, I was very, very specific with the guy. This is where I want this. This is where I want that. And then I will hold the metal. I even burned myself, you know, because from the welding, you know, I got careless. And I, after I was holding the metal piece, one of the bars, you know, he was welding, but because I had to hold it to make sure it was level, you know, I had the leveler in the middle while he's tacking. First we will tack everything. Before we weld it to make sure, because sometimes when you weld, the metal shifts, you know, you can't just go and weld.
Right.
Oh, now it's crooked. No, you got to take that out.
Right.
I don't want nothing crooked. So it was the scariest part when it came to do that.
I think I'm as puzzled now as I was when this whole thing started. I you know, honestly, I mean, this is something I could never imagine taking on. I think the one thing that's really cool about Benji is I've passed him multiple times and I said, where are you at with this project? And he'd be in his garage and he'd go, I'm trying to figure this part out, right? Like he didn't have the answer, but he was searching for it. And it's really interesting to hear about all the other people that also participated in this project with you or continue to participate in this project with you. I think that speaks volumes to who you are and, you know, to what something like this involves. It's not just one person's job or effort. It's a lot of expertise pulling in, but, you know, knowing how to ask the right questions. Benji, I don't know about you, Trav. Do you have any more questions? Because it's like, it's just an extensive amount of information that's very interesting.
It really is. It's a lot to process. One thing, as Tim was talking about, the number of people that it takes and everything too, it's that, and it's also the endless curiosity. It's like you have to continually look for new answers and look to make sure, you know, everything works. And it's like, it's this intent, it's intentionality, it's attention to detail. It's, you know, it's a fearlessness, frankly. It's like that part actually boggles my mind more than anything, because it's like even to get, like Tim is saying, even to start this, I would be terrified. So I don't know. It's really cool. You're going to have to send us some photos and stuff. I would love to see more of it. Yeah. I Googled it while we were talking, and I mean, that's wild to put a giant engine in one of those things. That sounds really fun. And once you get that thing roaring, we'll have to put some.
Oh, I'll take you for a ride.
All right. Sounds good.
Well, we'll have the 5-point harness on. Make sure you won't go. Yeah. I'm going to be scared.
I'm not going in that car. Trav, if it's as loud as Benji's making it out, you may hear it in Ohio when he turns it on.
I was
going to
say, man, seriously.
I'm going to have mufflers on it because I don't want it too loud either. I don't want it crazy like that.
Benji, you know. Still, Trav, though, you know.
Trav, do you want to hit him with the impact question?
I do. Let me pull it up real quick because I never quite remember it perfectly the way Tim does.
You want me to do it?
All right. No, I got you. All right, Benji, we asked this question of every one of our guests. It's called our impact question. Can you name one experience or person that's had a profound impact on the person that you are today?
One of my cousins that passed away.
Would you mind sharing something about that cousin?
All my inspiration and everything came from him. Everything I pretty much know is I learned from him. No schooling. He was a jack of all trades, a master of none. But he was good.
That's great.
He was very good. He knew his stuff. He knew his stuff. I went to school with him to learn auto body, and the teacher was amazed with the stuff that he knew already. He was already painting cars for the teacher in the first week. So the guy was self-taught also. He learned a lot in Puerto Rico. Yeah.
That's a great legacy.
If I didn't stuck around him, who knows where I would have been today, like in my life. Like I probably would have took a bad route. Mm-hmm. Growing up where I grew up in New Brunswick, I would have went left. Mm-hmm. And instead him being there, it opened my eyes to what I could be, you know?
Very cool.
Yeah, that's a beautiful, I mean, we're grateful to him for his presence in your life, man, because you're doing amazing things. It's very inspiring.
Thank you.
Do you have any closing thoughts, Benji? Would you encourage all of our listeners to go out and build their own car?
Yeah, to build whatever they want to do it. Don't be scared to try it. It's never too late to learn to do something. And you also save money instead of paying that other guy that's going to rip you off.
I like it. Well, Benji, thank you very much for sharing your story. You know, I think I can speak for everybody, including Tim, when I say that we're anxious to see the pictures and watch you roll down the street. That's cool. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you here, Benji. Thanks for joining.
All right.
Benji, thank you so much again. Really interesting. I'm with Tim. As you said in the intro, I don't know like half, maybe three quarters of what you were saying in terms of being unable to technically understand everything you're tackling, but it looks amazing. Yeah. And it sounds incredible. I applaud any and all effort in this. It's just so, you know, I can get through like an oil change. That's about as far as I get.
Oh,
so maybe
gosh.
A brake swap, but yeah, that was really impressive.
You could do that. That's impressive, man. I'm more perplexed now than I was when I first met Benji.
I honestly have no idea what he was talking about.
It did not clear anything up for you.
I mean, so the good news is in something that was helpful to learn was that he does have some experience, right, in this space. And he brings that with him. I thought, originally, I thought he was just decided to take this project on, you know, on a whim. But he does have some experience. He has some expertise, clearly. But it's still a tremendous, you know, show of like talent and intelligence. 100%.
And also just like the ingenuity it takes, but also it's funny, you know, you hear a guy like that talk about how steeped in the culture of it and the experience of it, but also he's still, one of the first things he said was he goes on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, even the guys who are like literally holding the wrench and about to do the thing are still like, I'm going to see how other people do this on YouTube. Like that to me is incredible. It's like, wow.
That's a great point, man. Yeah, there's so much information out there.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow, that was fun, man. I can't wait to keep you posted on when that car is done, and hopefully I'll go for a ride in it. But
we might have to get you to record a little trip around the block or something once he gets it out there.
Yeah, maybe he'll let me drive.
I would advise against that, but yeah. I mean, did you see the tires on that thing, though? Like, I'm not going to put you behind the wheel of that. Are you insane? You're going to end up in somebody's living room. Dude,
I think I'm a much better driver than you.
That's maybe. It's possible.
I'm just kidding. It's cool, man. Benji, thank you. That was a lot of fun. This has been a great episode. We've got about, I think, 4 or so more people to highlight. 3 or 4 more between now and the end of season 2. So, Trav, I'm enjoying this, I think, as much as you are.
Yeah, I agree. It's a lot of fun. Thanks, everybody.
Cool. Stay well, everybody.
Tim and Travis on the mic, talking life and what's alike. Middle age, it's quite the ride. Finding joy and chasing pride. Career dreams and daily grind. Funny moments that we find. Letting go of yesterday. Making paths along the way. Middle age. Middle age mayhem, breaking free, finding out who we can be, laughing, learning all the time. Tim and Travis in their prime. Every step a brand new plan, older, wiser, still we stand, navigating through the years, sharing stories, laughs and cheers. Finding out who we can be, laughing, learning all the time. Tim and Travis in their prime. Every step a brand new plan, older, wiser, still we stand, navigating through the years, sharing stories, laughs and cheers. Middle age, enjoying the fun. Middle age has just begun. Tim and Travis lead the way. Every episode will slay.
I look the best of the three of us.
You're tired?
All right, Trav, you want me to kick it off?
That thing is cool, man.
I just want you to be happy.
That'll go in the outtakes.